from deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, don't worry about the United States leaving Afghanistan. I know a lot of folks are fussing about it, as they say. But reassurance came this week from General Martin Dempsey, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. U.S. troops will remain. Some U.S. troops will remain in Afghanistan on 10 bases. Oh, sorry, not Afghanistan, Iraq. Sorry, Iraq. Folks are fussing about us pulling out of Iraq. What? Take two. So he says the forces will provide training and counterterrorism to Iraqis. We've been there how long? And they're not trained for counterterrorism yet. And also, instruction in operating American-made tanks. You turn the key to the right to start it. And F-16 fighter jets. The trainers will remain largely on their bases, so he says, this isn't about moving around the country very much at all. So we won't need those flak jackets and hardened Humvees that we never got. All right, so we'll be there in spirit and in body. Now, ladies and gentlemen, because Europe is so dumb, the European Union, you know, first of all, I am full up to here with folks in this country saying, if we don't solve our debt problem, boy, we'll be just like Italy or Greece. Italy or Greece do not print their own currency. End of story. Anyway, Europe is so dumb, the European Union on Monday of this week prohibited the use of X-ray body scanners in European airports. European Commission adopted the rule, quote, in order to not risk jeopardizing citizens' health and safety, unquote. What does that have to do with X-ray? Yeah. European countries will be allowed to use the alternative body scanner, the millimeter wave machine that relies on radio frequencies. They have not been linked to cancer, oddly enough. They're used in Canada. I'm so sick of this Canada and Europe being smarter than us thing. The TSA has deployed some millimeter wave machines in U.S. airports, but it's using both scanners, as you heard on this broadcast a couple weeks ago, because it makes for better competition. The TSA did not comment specifically on the European Union decision. The Brits will not be allowed to complete a trial of X-ray scanners. Or they will be allowed to complete a trial, but not to deploy them on a permanent basis when the trial ends. So, if you want to fly anywhere, fly from Europe. And news of the godly, ladies and gentlemen, almost as good as the church owning a porn publisher in Germany comes this. From Britain, a Catholic Church child safety coordinator, who was in charge of investigating sexual abuse allegations, was jailed for a year this week for internet pedophile offenses. You see how neatly that works? That's like the arsonist who sets fires. Isn't it cool? Christopher Jarvis, a married father of four, investigated historic claims of child abuse, interviewing the victims when they were adults. He was responsible for child protection at 120 churches and parish community groups for 9 years. He had access to police and social services information about victims of child abuse. As a result of his conviction and sentencing, the Roman Catholic Church has ordered a review of child protection across the entire southwest of England. The church will be carrying out an inquiry. Actually, no, the National something, the NSPCC, will be carrying out the inquiry. The revelations that the church hired a pedophile in a key child protection role will add to the controversy, of course, surrounding the church. At the time of his arrest, Jarvis was leading an investigation into a sex abuse allegation in Devon at a Benedictine monastery. Hey, they make good booze. That's all I know. He was arrested after uploading images of prepubescent boys onto the Ning social networking website. He was caught on Ning. Police officers who traced him to his home in Plymouth, Devon, found more than 4,000 child pornography images, mainly of boys aged 10 to 12. You know, Penn State age. They were stored on his church-supplied computer, and they found a memory stick. The court heard that 4,300 images were found on the laptop and memory stick. The majority were at level one, the lowest level for abusive images. But there were 120 at level four, and you don't want to know. Hello, welcome to the show.
About to finish writing her fifth book. Mom and Dad, she paints as well. She wrote her own theory on relativity. It's better than Einstein's. She's all mine. Mom and Dad, I love her more than I've ever loved anything. And you should hear her sing. She's got a record deal. And if she leaves, I won't heal. Mum and Dad, she found a way of putting an end to global warming during our breakfast just this morning. She's getting a Nobel Prize. She's the best damn woman alive. And she doesn't mind the
the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer from Le Show World Headquarters. Welcome you to this week's edition of the self-same broadcast. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. This is from Current, the trade publication of public broadcasting. NPR test drives the infinite player. I'll read it for you. NPR Digital Service. You've heard of NPR. Used to be called something else. NPR Digital Services is experimenting with a new personalized streaming interface for public radio listening, the Infinite Player. It's dead simple. You press a button and it plays, says Michael Yach, director of product development. He continues, first you hear the latest NPR newscast. That's followed by stories we think you'll like from NPR's three main focus areas: news, arts and life, and music. Arts and life. The only controls are skip, pause, and 30-second rewind. That's right. There's nothing else you, the listener, can control. We're calling it the Infinite Player, he says, because it will continue playing stories until you turn it off, just like the radio. Listeners can use the thumbs up and thumbs down buttons to indicate whether they like a story, and the player will adapt to their preferences. More life. Yach writes, the player should deliver the kind of serendipitous experience you expect from NPR. With recommendations based on your input, NPR editor's judgment, you know, the same kind that didn't tell you who the intel officials were around the world that disputed WMD before the war, that judgment, and story popularity. The player is a product of NPR Digital Services, quote, culture of rapid iteration. I think bacteria are involved in that culture. This, according to Andrew Phelps of the Nieman Journalism Lab. NPR Digital Chief Kinsey Wilson says it's not a traditional product launch. It's not nearly as baked as something we would launch, even as a beta project. But it's a way to do some rapid innovation and see if we're even close to the mark. Infinite Player works on recent versions of Google Chrome and Safari browsers. So you Internet Explorer, I don't think anybody who uses Internet Explorer listens to NPR and vice versa. But that's just me. The kind of speculation that happens when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now news of Nice Corp. The phone hacking scandal has taken a new twist. This according to a non-Nice Corp-owned newspaper in Britain, the Daily Mail. It's taken a new twist after it was revealed computers used by News of the World journalists were destroyed by putting them through a grinder. That'll take care of the data. A grinder. They were taken out and smashed up last autumn at a time when News International was being sued over the illegal activity at the now-defunct News of the World Sunday tabloid. The computers were destroyed during a move from the paper's headquarters in East London to another office, according to court records. Only the terminal belonging to show business reporter Dan Evans still exists. Well, they kept the showbiz computer, you see. They've got priorities. But that's why it's Nice Corp, ladies and gentlemen. News of Nice Corp. It gets nicer. They'll be back on the Apologies of the Week later in this very broadcast. But now,
the Corps of Engineers had its beginning on the 16th of June, 1775.
No, this was supposed to be the short version. I can't listen to all that again. From the Let Us Try file, ladies and gentlemen, the head Let Us file. Test trenches cut into a problematic levee. This is news of the Army Corps of Engineers, in case you're not familiar with Let Us Try their motto. Test trenches cut into a problematic levee being raised south of Marrero, that's a suburb of New Orleans, has unearthed logs, concrete chunks, tires, hubcaps, a hot water tank, and a shopping cart, according to a blistering report by the West Bank Levee Authority that questions the levee's structural integrity. The testing also revealed sections of wet and poorly compacted clay that prompted a levee authority official to dub it the Jelly Donut Levee. Findings raise questions about whether the $29 million project should be redone, according to the president of the West Bank Levee Board. This is the most ludicrous Keystone Cop Act I have seen in my life, says Susan McClay, president of the West Bank Levee Authority. And, of course, the Keystone Cops she was talking about are the United States Army Corps of Engineers. A Corps spokeswoman said some of the debris may be linked to an old dump in the area, but she could not confirm he could not confirm a connection. In a brief written statement, the Corps chief engineer in New Orleans said the testing is ongoing and any findings will be evaluated. So you all go home now. There's nothing to see here. 40 test trenches have been dug by a team of Corps engineers assembled after levee authority inspectors raised persistent concerns about woody debris. Didn't he used to coach at Ohio State? No, he did not. In clay used to raise the 3.5-mile levee on the West Bank. The Tiger Team, so-called, is composed of engineers from outside the Corps New Orleans district, but the levee authority is calling for an actual independent review by a third party, saying local Corps officials have exerted undue influence over the testing. That doesn't sound like the Corps I know. They wouldn't do that. Well, they would try. Levee Board member Michael Merritt, a geologist, says Corps officials have repeatedly downplayed the debris problem and did nothing to stop a contractor from bulldozing excavated clay back into a trench as levee authority inspectors tried to collect samples. Another levee board member, Paul Dauphin, said the alleged attempt to, quote, bulldoze the evidence, unquote, raises doubts about the Tiger Team's independence. Corps officials at the scene said the shopping cart likely was part of the existing berm and had not been placed there during the ongoing levee-raising project. But a member of the levee board said the cart should have been discovered and removed under Corps specifications that call for removing all pre-existing debris to a depth of 3 feet before new material is added to a levee. He said there's no question that a hefty construction crane hook found less than 6 inches below the levee surface was a recent addition. Well, they're trying. To try is to succeed, by the way, is part of the lyric of that song. Dateline, more Corps. The United States Army Corps of Engineers in Omaha said it will change its approach to managing the Missouri River following the summer of record flooding that damaged or destroyed hundreds of homes, led to millions of dollars in road repairs, and forced communities to scramble to build temporary levees. The Corps says it'll make the changes in the coming months, including getting as much water out of the river basin's reservoir system as possible before spring, when the rains come, and aggressively releasing more water in the spring if needed. You see. Because they figured out that the rains come in the spring. The Corps is also looking at how much more reservoir space might be needed to ease flooding. These changes come in response to concern voiced by citizens, many of whom lost crops or were forced out of their homes for weeks by the flooding during 8 public meetings recently in Iowa, Missouri, Nebraska, Kansas, Montana, North Dakota. See, The Corps is trying everywhere. And nearly 3 months after firing New Orleans Director of Public Works, the city's mayor, Mitch Landrieu, has announced the appointment of a new head of the Department of Public Works, a former official of the United States Army Corps of Engineers. Good luck, everybody. Those potholes, will be filled, but they'll be filled with shopping carts. I hope that's okay with y'all. That's our core. They are, when they say let us try, they mean let us remain. I mean, news of the Corps of Engineers, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And in the copyrighted feature file, nothing holds a baton to news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole Jr. So first of all, the 2012 London Olympics will fail to deliver any lasting sporting legacy for most young Brits because of 6 years of failed government policy and missed opportunity, says the chairman of the British Olympic Association. That's who. In an outspoken attack, Lord Moynihan, who will manage the British team for the Games, said since the UK won the 2012 bid 7 years ago, politicians have failed to honor pledges to drive through a national sporting revolution at school and grassroots levels. Moynihan, who won an Olympic silver medal as a rowing cox, told the London Observer that barring a last-minute change in policy to build better links between schools, local sports clubs, and volunteers, the Olympics would spur precious little improvement in youth participation in sports. Moynihan, a Tory, former Tory sports minister, says it's unacceptable that 50% of British medal winners come from private schools because they're the kids with the money. London organizers intend to keep Dow Chemical as the sponsor of an artistic rap encircling the 2012 Olympic Stadium, but don't get hungry, not that kind of rap. Despite concerns in India over the company's links, Dow's Chemical's links to the Bhopal gas leak disaster in 1984. Lord Coe, formerly Sebastian Coe, says, we looked at the options on offer, the sustainability of those options, and by some distance, Dow came out ahead on any one of those reasons. Coe, however, did raise concerns about the possibility of a taxi driver's strike during next year's games. Some cab drivers are angry about the installation of special lanes that can be used only by officials, athletes, and sponsors. That would be an extraordinary route to take during a celebration of our city, says Coe. He describes the 109 miles of special lanes as a crucial lifeline to the smooth running of the Olympics. Coe says a taxi driver's strike would send the wrong message. A royal palace is to be rented out during the games. It's a break with nearly 500 years of royal protocol. The Queen has personally approved the plans to allow businesses to take their pick of the palace's throne room, the tapestry room, and the Queen Anne room. And catering will be done by the palace, that is to say, by the taxpayers. The palace is exploiting its historical heritage and its prime location, said a source. Nearby Hyde Park will be the venue for some swimming events. Come hang with the Queen. And the United States has raised repeated concerns about security at the London Olympics, preparing to send up to 1,000 of our agents to provide protection for America's contestants and diplomats. We are not equal partners in this, says a British security official. They, the Americans, are being very demanding. This friction is adding to the pressures on the London Organizing Committee. They're now calling in some military. Originally, the organizing committee had thought 10,000 guards would be enough, but after a review over the summer, it now believes it will need up to 21,000. The military will have to stand up some people, otherwise a private security firm, which has a contract for it, has got the Olympic Committee over a barrel. The Olympics, it's a movement. We all need one. Every day. You may have missed this story on the subject of, just hearts and minds. This is a week or so ago, the soldier accused of being the ringleader of a rogue U.S. Army unit that killed three Afghan civilians last year for sport was found guilty of all charges. The soldier, Staff Sergeant Calvin Gibbs of Billings, Montana, was found guilty of three counts of murder, conspiring to commit murder, and several other charges, including assaulting a fellow soldier and taking fingers and a tooth from the dead. He's sentenced to life in prison, but could be eligible for parole in less than 10 years. The verdict followed a nine-day court-martial at Joint Base Lewis-McChord in the state of Washington, a victory for Army prosecutors whose case against Sergeant Gibbs was built largely on testimony from other soldiers. Sergeant Gibbs' lawyer tried to convince the panel most of the soldiers who accused his client were doing so to get more lenient sentences. That never happens. All told, five soldiers were charged with killing civilians in three separate incidents early last year. Soldiers repeatedly described Sergeant Gibbs as devising, quote, scenarios in which the unit would fake combat situations by detonating grenades or planting weapons near their victims. They said he even supplied drop weapons and grenades to make the victims appear armed. Some soldiers took pictures posing with the dead and took body parts as trophies. Gibbs was accused of snipping fingers from victims and later using them to intimidate another soldier. He also pulled a tooth from one man, saying in court that he had disassociated the bodies from being human. The taking the fingers and tooth was like removing antlers from a deer. Gibbs said he was ashamed of taking the body parts, but that he was trying to be hard, a hard individual. But he was killing, according to the prosecution, for sport. Many of the defendants pled guilty to other charges, including smoking hashish, and assaulting a soldier who eventually led Army investigators to discover the killings. Gibbs was the highest-ranking soldier involved in the case of killing Afghans for sport. But there may be more.
This Saturday night, pay-per-view explodes with the most martial art of all, Ultimate War Fighting. For the first time, live from Bagram, UFW champion Kelvin Eat My Lead Gibman squares off against a trio of totally unarmed opponents from a local village.
1-on-3. I like these odds.
And on the same program, Alfonso the Assassin Belgrado in a cage match with a raw Afghan conscript.
Except he's the only one in the cage.
Plus, because none of these battles last more than 13 seconds, there are dozens more events on this unforgettable night. Let's face it, video games are for wusses. This is the real thing. This is Ultimate War Fighting 2, The Quest for Dignity. In 3D in selected cities, call your cable or satellite provider and tell them you want Ultimate War Fighting, or you'll kill him.
Love. just trying to do just this. Yeah, but distraction to the workers are iniquity. Yeah, and many will ask, can you see their plight? Yeah, but don't ya, I know you're gonna help them tonight. Yeah, a little bit more. A little bit more, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. A little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more than before. Yeah, yeah. See, it was love, 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 love.
This is Le Show. When I went to University of California, the campus cops, well, we tended to deride them as overweight and kind of underqualified for policing responsibilities, basically kind of virtual cops more than anything else that just would kind of patrol the campus for no real purpose. And I guess I have to then take a certain amount of responsibility for that critique, because in the intervening time, it appears, at least based on the evidence from one campus, that they've gone out and hired Bull Connor to run the campus police. So I'm sorry about that. And in that context, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Let's start with Rodri Davies. He's the lawyer for News International, part of Nice Corp, testifying this week in front of a judicial inquiry into the phone hacking and police corrupting scandal. Here is the Nice Corp attorney.
That phone hacking was wrong. It was shameful. It should never have happened. News International apologizes for it unreservedly. Nothing that it is said on its behalf during this inquiry is intended to detract from or qualify that apology in any way.
All right, then. That's as absolute as you can get. And then there's this from the head of FIFA, the world organization that runs soccer, as we call it, football as they call it, who had earlier said that racist comments between players on the field during a game should be settled by a handshake at game's end. This is Sepp Blatter.
I see football as a game that unites people. I'm sorry. And I regret that my statements earlier this week have resulted in an unfortunate situation and has taken this dimension. I am committed to the fight against racism. I want to make it very clear. I will not stop until we have stamped out of football racism.
Can I just be clear then? You are saying sorry to those black players, those many people around the world who were offended by your comments?
Absolutely, because my life is football. And then, at a certain, I found myself pushed into a corner of a very, I would say, unfortunate words I have used. And this I deeply, deeply regret. It hurts, and I'm still hurting, because I couldn't expect or envisage such a reaction, but the reaction is there, and when you are in a situation where you have done something which was absolutely not totally correct, otherwise it wouldn't have created this, I can only say, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but you say it about 4 minutes worth. Sepp Blatter, ladies and gentlemen, with the most fulsome apology of the week. But we continue. Dateline Beirut. Syria's foreign minister, Walid Amualem, has apologized for attacks on foreign diplomatic missions after the Arab League announced it was suspending Damascus for its crackdown on protesters. As for the attacks on foreign embassies, as foreign minister, I apologize for these aggressions, Mualem told a televised news conference. More governmental apologies. Mexican officials have formally apologized for the disappearance of a guerrilla sympathizer and folk singer who disappeared after being stopped at an army checkpoint way back in 1974. Relatives of Rosendo Radia said they chose not to attend the ceremony because the government hadn't consulted them about the date. The Inter-American Court of Human Rights condemned Mexico's government in 2009 for failing to adequately investigate the disappearance. The court ordered the government to apologize, pay damages to relatives, and investigate the case. So, not a voluntary apology, not like this one. Germany, also in our apologizing countries, filed. It's apologized for not being able to prevent the deaths of 10 people, 8 Turks, 1 Greek, and 1 German policewoman at the hands of xenophobic neo-Nazis. Federal Interior Minister Hans-Peter Friedrich voiced the apology, but it was Federal Justice Minister Sabine Lutheiser-Scharrenberger who recalled that funds exist to compensate for damages and that relatives of the murder victims would be able to receive aid from these funds. A former prosecutor has apologized for sending an innocent man to prison. In Texas, of all places, Ken Anderson, now a district judge in Williamson County, was the district attorney in 1986 who prosecuted Michael Morton, convicted of murdering his wife, Christine. He spent 25 years in prison, released recently after, yes, new DNA evidence. The DNA linked someone else to the crime. Anderson, who was accused, among other things, of concealing key evidence that could have proven Morton's innocence, issued an apology on the steps of Williamson County Courthouse, where he's now a judge. He said he didn't feel it was appropriate to comment on the case while it was pending before other judges, but now that those proceedings have essentially concluded, he wanted to publicly apologize. He says he has no plans to resign as judge. I think he'll be a better judge for this. Three members of Herman Cain's campaign have apologized after a man who said he was there to protect the Republican presidential candidate manhandled a reporter. Several journalists were covering Cain tried to film the candidate as he was returning to his bus after an event in Coral Springs, Florida. As they trailed Cain, a man in plainclothes blindsided National Journal CBS reporter Lindsay Boerma into the side of the campaign bus. The same man struck his arm out and clotheslined Boerma. The man refused to identify himself. They have now apologized, as the Cain campaign. And in a further statement, explained, Seattle Mayor Mike McGinn apologized Wednesday after some Occupy Seattle protesters, including an 84-year-old woman, were pepper sprayed during a march Tuesday night. To those engaged in peaceful protest, I'm sorry you were pepper sprayed, he said. I also called in the police chief and the command staff to review the actions of last night. They agreed that this was not their preferred outcome, unquote. They'd prefer it to have happened at UC Davis. West Valley, Utah Mayor Mike Winder has resigned from the Summit Group PR firm, saying his use of a false identity to write news stories about affairs in his city has, quote, tarnished the reputation of the agency and its employees. And he has apologized for that. The president of the Citadel Military College apologized this week for not reporting to law enforcement an allegation against a camp counselor involving sexual activity and a child. I'd say we're profoundly sorry, says Lieutenant General John Rosa. We're sorry we didn't pursue it more. We acted on what we thought was our best information. We did not pursue it enough. I think he's bucking for a job at Penn State. Dateline New Delhi, the United States Embassy has apologized after former Indian ambassador's shoes and jacket were checked after he'd boarded a flight to America. The embassy statement said the incident at JFK was deeply regretted. We should all be ex-presidents of India. We'll get an apology for that stuff. After the embarrassing incident in which he was caught calling Prime Minister Netanyahu a liar, French President Nicolas Sarkozy is doing damage control. He sent a condolence letter to Netanyahu for the death of his father-in-law, and he took the opportunity to apologize for the incident and pledged his forward-going friendship to the Prime Minister. Los Angeles Dodgers owner Frank McCourt has apologized to the team's fans and says he's determined to hand off this franchise in better shape than I found it. I know the last couple of years were very, very difficult, said McCourt. I'm very, very sorry about that. That's four verys. That's a team record. McCourt said this at the dedication of a Dodgers dream field in Compton. We're going to move forward and handle the situation in the most professional way possible and make sure the baton is passed in a classy way with some Dodger dogs. And another store has apologized to a woman for preventing her from breastfeeding while she was shopping. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. It's a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, news of
AFAC.
I came over here just not to make that too loud for you. The war in Afghanistan has had some unlikely side effects. One is a real estate bubble, a housing bubble. Yes, we taught them something. Sure. We modeled something for them. Kabul's housing bubble is now deflating rapidly amid a rash of extravagant insurgent attacks, reports McClatchy newspapers, and growing worries about among Afghans about what will happen after U.S. combat forces stand down by 2014. For many Afghans, that announcement of withdrawal marked the beginning of the end of foreign intervention in their country. Brokers say the market value of homes scooped up like trophies by Afghans who hold high-paying jobs with foreign embassies or aid agencies or scored lucrative contracts with coalition forces, the market value has fallen by one-third or more. Ever since the Americans announced the drawdown of their forces, says one, I haven't sold a single house. But that's not all that's going on in Afghanistan right now. There's continuing criticisms of corruption in the awarding of contracts for major projects such as highways. That's a subject that's going to be dealt with on Karzai Talk, next here on the show.
From Afghanistan Public Radio, where the pledge drive never stops. Direct from the freshly re-spackled Presidential Palace in downtown Kabul, home of the $3 French fry, I'm Mahmoud Karzai.
And I'm Hamid Karzai. We're Buck and Check, the Legal Tender Brothers. Welcome to another edition of Karzai Talk. Today's show comes to you with assistance of Ocean Palms Condominiums, where every unit has no view of either ocean or palms.
Well, yes, but that's a guarantee you can count on.
Speaking of counting, that's an expensive suit you've got on today, my younger brother.
Oh, it only looks expensive.
What? They've opened a men's warehouse in Kabul?
No, an American official just wanted an upgrade to first class on Afghan Airlines.
Was he going or coming?
My dear brother, at this point in time, if you see an American coming, you are watching a rerun.
A rerun. If you see one going, you are using night vision goggles.
But as I understand it, my older brother isn't selling any of those condos, even with the guarantee.
That is the sad truth. Mm. We even threw in 3 months free use of the bomb squad. Still, nothing.
Maybe you should offer to put water in the pool. Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hello, second-time caller, long-time governor of Ghazni
province.
Oh, a governor. We're definitely getting a better class of callers since we started broadcasting in HD. My dear brother forgets that you called in on last week's show, Governor Khan.
That's right, but I didn't get my full 3 minutes last week, and I paid $1,000 for those 3 minutes.
Oh, my dear brother. Don't tell me you've stooped to selling phone calls to our show. Stooped? I thought it was a step up. No, Mahmoud, we didn't meet our pledge goal.
Oh, despite the tote bags, the mugs, and the commemorative kofti.
No, the listeners didn't quite come up to the plate.
Mm.
As a matter of fact, they stayed in the dugout with a tarp over their head. And we do have to pay for that HD transmitter, where the Chinese come and turn it off.
Yeah.
So, Governor Khan, here's that minute we owe you. What's on your mind?
Well, you know I have a beautiful BMW 1 Series convertible.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to drive. It's got great acceleration.
Oh, it's the perfect car for you, Governor.
Oh.
An excellent getaway vehicle.
But the problem is our American friends turned off the spigot on money to get the big new highway finished.
Actually, Governor, the way I heard it, they turned off the money to get the highway started.
Well, you can't finish it if you don't start it.
They didn't start it because the governor's friends who got the contract to build the highway appear to have done something else with the money.
Well, as I understand it, they just put the money in Dubai because the alternative was putting it in the Kabul Bank.
Which, as I recall, had just gone Kabul-lui. Kabul-lui. Kablooey.
That's right.
Well, the good thing about not having a lot of American money is that we won't have to worry about where to deposit it.
But don't you think it's a terrible waste of a BMW 1 Series convertible when the only place I can drive it is from the garage to the security shack and back again?
Well, how's the mileage?
No, seriously, Governor Khan, I do agree that the highway was a wonderful key to the future of your province, a key to the building of a unified nation, a key to economic growth in the decade to come.
The problem is we lost the keys.
I guess I used up my minute.
Well, you can always buy more.
And one thing I can guarantee about buying another phone call on this show.
Oh, what's that?
No ocean, no palms.
Thanks for calling. Well, it gets so dark so early these days, it feels like we're doing the all-night show.
But that's all the time for Cars I Talk.
We had help today from the NATO Foundation. Search in the world for a reason to exist.
Legal services for Cars I Talk from the law firm of Ketchum & Newcomb.
I'm Hamid.
And I'm Mahmoud.
We'll be back next week with another edition of Cars I Talk.
This is APR, Afghanistan Public Radio.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
Why don't you ever tell the good news about atomic power?
It's a good question, Addy. That's our friend Addy the Atom. We'll look for some good news today, okay?
Okay.
Deadline, Japan. Additional safety measures required at Japan's nuclear plants in the wake of the Fukushima disaster may cost $252 million per reactor.
See, it's cheap.
The government now says emergency measures such as maintaining cooling at a 1,200-megawatt nuclear station are estimated to cost about $153 million, according to the National Policy Unit. Other costs include steps to secure emergency power generators and improve external sources of electricity, and about $16 million to prevent explosions and equip workers with radiation-protected gear in a severe nuclear accident.
That's overkill.
Addy, you just want to just listen quietly?
Okay. I'm excited.
You don't want to get an atom excited. Japanese authorities in Tokyo have halted the shipment of rice from some farms northwest of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant after finding higher than allowed levels of radioactive cesium. According to authorities, the rice was grown about 36 miles northwest of the plant. The provincial prefectural government banned rice shipments from the district after tests found a sample of brown rice from one farm contained radioactive cesium at a level about 25% higher than government regulations allow, a level that experts say poses only a slight long-term risk. Just a slight long-term risk of cancer from the brown rice, you see. It's the latest of many limitations on livestock and produce imposed after the Fukushima disaster. To replace aging steam generators, Progress Energy in 2009 was about to cut a big hole in the concrete building that shields the nuclear reactor, said Charles Hovey, an experienced construction foreman who'd worked on similar projects at other nuclear plants. Progress planned to use a different procedure to cut into its containment building. I'd never heard of it being done like this before. I just wanted to express my concerns to you, he wrote, one last time. Progress considered Hovey's point, then went ahead with its plan as intended. Disaster followed. Workers discovered a crack in the wall while cutting a hole through the 42-inch thick concrete. A later repair attempt created a second crack. The plant has been shut down since. Progress will not restart the plant for at least 2 more years, if ever. Price tag for the fix, $2.5 billion and rising. Progress officials now argue that customers should be forced to help pay for the damage since no one could have reasonably foreseen the problems. This could not have been predicted, Progress spokeswoman Suzanne Grant wrote to the St. Petersburg Times.
So they didn't listen to the guy.
Come on, lay off. An Energy Department research and development plan for selecting nuclear fuel cycles and technologies that generate energy. That research plan fails to fully consider current readiness levels and input from industry or international partners, says the Government Accountability Office. As Department of Energy investigates the possibility of reprocessing spent fuel and recycling nuclear material for energy generation, it has failed to address the time and costs associated with such development. That's all. But wait, there's more. There's always more. New research has found that radioactive material in parts of northeastern Japan exceeds levels considered safe for farming. The findings provide the first comprehensive estimates of contamination across Japan following Fukushima. Food production is likely to be affected, say the researchers. Japanese authorities have halted the ship. No, we have that. We had that. Why did I print that twice?
See? Nobody's perfect.
The Nuclear Regulatory Commission will conduct a special investigation at Progress Energy's Brunswick, North Carolina nuclear plant after a highly unusual mishap caused boiling water to flow out of a reactor chamber that was not sealed properly. The federal agency says inspectors will spend much of next week at the twin reactor Brunswick plant to determine what went wrong. The incident posed no risk to Progress employees or the public, said officials. France, on the other hand, needs to upgrade the protection of vital functions in all of its nuclear reactors to avoid a disaster in the event of a national calamity, according to the head of its nuclear safety agency. Experts on radiation protection and nuclear safety delivered a 500-page report to the nuclear watchdog this week, which will in turn hand the conclusions over to the government. Peer reviewers from other European countries will then study the findings until the end of June. That's news of our friend the Atom. You proud?
But where's the good news?
We'll have the good news next week, okay?
All right.
Clean, cheap, safe. Too clean to be safe. Too clean to be metered. Our friend the Atom. And another energy-related news. Since I can remember the word energy. Chevron now says it caused an oil spill off the coast of Brazil, which is likely to pose problems for the oil producer in a region crucial to its growth. Oil has been seeping from the ocean floor since November 8th. Until now, the company has been slow to acknowledge that the spill was directly related to its exploratory drilling, saying instead that the well was suspected to be contributing to seepage. But now Chevron spokesman says the drilling was responsible for the seepage. That's human energy at work. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns to you next week at the same time over the same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America by the shortwave giant WBCQ 7.490 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com and available as a free podcast through KCRW.com. And be just like never having imagined the calamities could happen, even though you're warned about them. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you very much. Tip of the Show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. This broadcast is on Twitter at The Harry Shearer. Join the almost 50,000 followers. And did I miss the big sale on pepper spray? The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.